We now go to the Windsor, Detroit area, where an alien craft has just landed.
I want you men to surround the craft. Chris, you stay with me.
What are we going to do, Jeff?
We're going in.
What? They're extraterrestrials.
What are you doing here? Why have you come here?
We have come here to listen to 99.1 FM CJAM.
99.1 FM CJAM, redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
On the show today, it's Canadian guitarist vocalist of the hard metal band Psycho. Mike Freewheelin' Mier joins me to talk about his lengthy career in metal from Wicked Angel to Psycho. Mike was on the show last week for the You Talkin' to Me Pledge Drive special, and with a 25th anniversary Psycho CD on the way, complete with a brand new song and video, it's great to have him on to speak at length about heavy metal and more. Mike, welcome to You Talkin' to Me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the Freewheelin', where's that come from?
Gee, that goes back a number of years.
Is that self-inflicted?
Sort of, kind of. I got that name, actually, back when I was in the band with Wicked Angel, with you. A friend of mine used to call me Freewheeling Mad Dog from Angel. That's how I got it one day. A lot to do with my attitude and the way I was living my life back in the days, to say the least.
Right on. So you're primarily a guitarist and vocalist now, but you played bass in Wicked Angel, and I want to talk a little bit about that for people that might not remember the band, because, I mean, it was an 80s metal band, power metal band, and tell us how Wicked Angel got started, basically, and to your recollection.
Yeah, that's a great story. As a lot of people do know, I was in the band, and you and I kind of got it started back in the day, basically right out of high school, right into my garage, and... You know, we put some Kiss posters up and filled the fridge full of stubby bottle beers and plugged in our guitars and started learning tunes, Kiss tunes and all that kind of stuff, and some old Sabbath and Motorhead and all that stuff. It was great. We played, did some covers for a while. Remember you and I, and then we got into...
What kind of stuff?
We did some Motley Crue. I think Shout at the Devil was big in them days, and some Twisted Sister, Sabbath, Kiss, and what else did we do? Stuff like that. You know, early is that we started getting into the Metallica and like the harder stuff as it was coming out.
Yeah, some heavier stuff that wasn't quite as popular.
That's the thing.
Or was popular among... metalheads and stuff like that, but I mean, you know, not as far as radio goes.
Yeah, what
Man of War.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you know, you're bringing back some good memories. The thing that we did, which was different from everybody else, is we played everything that no one else did, you know.
Yeah.
The atypical bar scene, you know, stuff that was out there, you know, we kind of did the alternative to that, and then found some other songs on the album that people may not have heard or they didn't play on the radio. So, yeah, you know, we'll cover that tune. Like you said, Manowar and that kind of stuff. So we evolved from there and jammed out for a few years and then started, you know, you started writing some original material and we jammed on that for a while and that went over well. And the following got bigger and bigger and, you know, we started getting gigs, you know, Danny's Tavern down on Riverside. That was a great place to go play. Back up some of the bigger bands that were coming out of the States then. You know, the Almighty Strut, Seduce, Halloween, Weapons, you know, some big names came out of there, and we were lucky enough to play with them.
And what about the lineup of the band? Because that changed a number of times, so.
Yeah, it was, we started in Blizzard with, Brett LaJoy on drums and me on bass, you on guitar, of course. I think we got Dwayne Pickersgill coming in singing after for a while, and then... I think it changed. We bolted out of town. You know, we wanted to go on the road, and we figured that's, you know, we weren't really getting too far in Windsor. So, hey, let's take off, you know, load up and go on the road.
And it was only us that went. We had to find new guys because nobody wanted to do anything.
Yeah. It was like, who wants to go? And then, you know, it ended up me and you standing in front of the line. Everybody else backed out. But, hey, that's what it was. And we took the bull by the horns and took off, and we found a couple guys out of London, I think. Rick Amy and Chris Main, and we put the, you know, we went under the name Wicked Angel up there and played some high school gigs, some bars, some clubs. Actually, we were, you know, quite successful at it for a while there.
Tell us about some of the accomplishments that, you know, came out of the 80s, Wicked Angel to start. Anyway, before we get into Psycho and Razorback and all that crazy stuff.
I guess we could talk for a while. You know, we did a lot of stuff. You know, we did some demo tapes, sent them around. I think we shipped them off to Europe and stuff like that. We had some interest. I remember, you know, we got some management for a while, got us some gigs playing with Anvil. You know, that's no small
another great potatoes. Canadian band.
Yeah, you know, and it was great. So we got hooked on those kind of tickets. You know, a lot of festivals, rock festivals. Of course, we did our share of Battle of the Bands and all that kind of stuff. You know, you name it. If there was a gig to be had, we'd be there.
And what about the demo release stuff? How did you record it? Where did you record it?
You know, renting the old Fostex 8-track from Ron McQuaid's.
That cassette. Wow.
Like back in the day, and, yeah, and maybe putting it in a little recorder there and hitting the play button. I mean, that's pretty much the extent of recording technology back in those days.
Yeah.
I remember we did a cassette called Metal Hell. Mm-hmm. I think we did our first 8 original tunes on there. And in my opinion, them are some of the best tunes to this day. You know, they still yeah, sound great when you listen to them. Recording's a little shaky, but the tunes were great.
And that was recorded, if I'm not mistaken, by Dwayne, right?
I think Dwayne, yeah, he had a little bit of knowledge.
He wasn't in the band anymore, but he had some knowledge of 8-track, 4-track recording.
Yeah, so he come to help us out. So, because I certainly didn't know what I was doing. So he did a pretty good job on it.
As we'll find out maybe a little later in the show.
Yeah, a little taste of Metal Hell.
What was the local scene like back then?
I recall, I mean, you could play, there was bands, the band scene was extensive. There was every night of the week you could see a live band. It was mostly Top 40, and Top 40 in them days was rock and roll. The heavier stuff was a little tougher to get, and that's what, you know, we were all about. So it was a little tougher, and we predominantly played at, you know, Danny's. The Riv had some heavier bands there too. Kozak's, I remember the downstairs in the basement there had a club down there that they would accept the heavier stuff.
The Sandhill was around then too, but I don't think we played at the Sandhill.
Sandhill, I don't know.
I think I was closed down maybe by the time we actually started playing or whatever. But Danny's was a big rock and roll club back
Danny's
then.
Danny's was the place to be. If you were anything and anybody, you were playing at Danny's because it would be Monday night and the place would be jammed with 500 people.
That was the big rock club here, for sure.
Yeah, for sure it was. It was the Harpos of Windsor, that's what I always say.
And what was Wicked Angel's following like?
I mean, it was, we get a couple hundred people out wherever we went, and that was no problem at all.
Then how about some of the gigs? Obviously, the band played, didn't primarily play clubs, did some concert stuff.
I don't know how we got those
gigs. St. Clair College?
St. Clair College. I think we played here at the university.
University. What else? Anglo Club. Canadian Anglo Club.
Yeah. We did a lot of hall stuff, I guess. Yeah, you're right.
Surprised not more hall stuff, actually.
Yeah, because they were available. So,
well, even that, actually, we did later because you came back to Wicked Angel at some point or to do that show or something.
Yeah, we got back together doing a little reunion and then, show. And I think that was the way to go, too, if you couldn't get a gig in the bar, which was tougher because of the style of music. We did a lot of hall stuff like that. It's self-promotion stuff, self-marketing, you know, rent the hall, rent the PA, sell the tickets, sell the T-shirts, that type of stuff. That was very successful because you got, you know, the crowd that was into that style of music. So we did a lot of, you know, that kind of stuff, too, which was great.
And then that thing at the amphitheater outside at St. Clair College?
That was, I believe, 84, I'm thinking, 1984. Wow. Laser Rock.
The good days.
I think Honeymoon Suite, which was big in the day, they were there. Was a big, they had a big, I don't think it's there anymore, the amphitheater at that college there, but not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
I thought it was down, but anyway, I had a big outdoor concert venue, if you will, and they'd throw shows there, and they get some, we got hooked up with Laser Rock, who put it on at that time. You know, I think the headline ticket was Honeymoon Suite, which is certainly not, you know, metal, but I don't know how we got on that ticket, but we did, and I think we ended up blowing everybody away.
Okay, so we happen to have a real treat for listeners. Now, this is from the first Wicked Angel demo cassette. And this is a song actually that you wrote and sang on that demo tape, which was like 8 or 10 songs or something like that. Tell us about this song, and you know what it is.
Can I guess it's No One Gets Out Alive, if I can remember.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one. Yeah.
Remember it. I can't say I've heard it in the last 15 years, maybe. I think you gave me a disc with it on it. You burned it off the cassette onto a disc. Listen to it, and I can't even, I would take a wild guess it was just about our crazy lifestyle in the day. No one gets out alive. This is my best guess on what it's about.
And this actually, this is the probably the first tune that you actually wrote, recorded, I guess. I mean, was there anything else that was recorded before that?
Like, no. We didn't do anything. No, you were writing everything, and then I took a stab at it and came up with that song, and you said, yeah, let's fire it.
Because I remember back in the day, like high school time or whatever, in a garage, whatever, we were writing some stuff, and I think there might even be some guitar, bass, singing type stuff around or something, but we never actually made any songs before that.
Yeah, the good thing about you, JD, is wherever you went, you had a recorder. It was recorded. Yeah. I think our whole life
everything's
is
recorded. There's pictures, there's video of everything. So.
Yeah, so I'm sure you got an archive of it all. So yeah, I remember some demo, whatever it was, you know, songs we made up, riffs with bass and whatever. And
somewhere I have a 10-minute bass solo from your garage.
I think so.
This is No One Gets Out Alive from the first Wicked Angel demo cassette. Metal Hell.
Enjoy.
Have an interesting career or an interesting life experience that you'd like to share with others, you can contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking To Me website, youtalkingtome.ca. That's the letter U, talking the number two, me, youtalkingtome.ca. Okay, we're back. Mike Freewheeling Mier from the band Psycho, actually, and we were talking about Wicked Angel, because Mike played in Wicked Angel as well, played bass in Wicked Angel. How did your parents handle the whole music thing, you know what I mean? When you're probably before you played in a band, you guys must have had tunes cranking and everything. You got two brothers, so there's three of you there that were.
Yeah, it was quite the scene. Well, you recall our garage we had in our backyard. My dad rebuilt to put a new roof on and all that with the intention to put his car in there.
Yeah.
Lo and behold,
did
we
that
took
ever happen?
Never happened.
It'd be more like a drum kit and amps.
As soon as he was done, we were moving in drums, amps, and Kiss posters on the wall. Yeah, they certainly put up with a lot. I think we were around 15, 16 when that really took off. And, you know, we were out there cranking tunes to all hours of the night. And, you know, you know, different kids in the neighborhood, and you know, come, we'd get people to come and see us play. You know, they give me
the cops would come and see us play.
Cops would come and say, "Yeah, you guys gotta turn this down. It's 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever it was." And
did your mom and dad come out to shows and stuff like that?
My mom and dad supported me all the way. I even had my grandmother come out to our Psycho shows. We had played at the Capitol Theater. Yeah. At that time, she was probably, she would have been in her late 70s, early 80s then.
And this is your grandmother that's like 92 now?
She's 92 now, yeah. She'd come
still
out.
Still coming out to...
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to probably do some shows coming up. And
yeah, we're definitely going to be talking about that stuff because there's some new Psycho in the works, so... looking forward to getting to that too.
But I know being at your place too, when you know, we hung out, you know, in the high school years, grade 10, grade 11, hanging out, cranking tunes in your bedroom, you know. And you know, your parents just, you know, smiling, and you know, we were just locked in there. It seemed like for 8 hours at a time with the lights out and the tunes cranking.
That's how we got good, jamming. Man.
Yeah, you know, it was either at your house or in my garage, one of the two, or in the car, which I do recall was an old Toyota called the Beast.
That's right. Right.
Hence. One of the tunes we wrote when we crank up in our, I'm not sure if it was 8-track or we actually did have a cassette player in that thing.
I don't even recall. I'm going to say cassette probably, yeah.
So we were cranking tunes 24/7 no matter what we were doing. Yeah. It was a fun time for sure. Any parent that supports their kid in any kind of music and that can do that, I think is awesome. And all our parents were included in that. We're very lucky.
Of course, we're going to get into Psycho, but I want to talk about what you were doing briefly after Wicked Angel, actually, and that was Razorback. Tell us a little bit about that project.
Yeah, after I think you and I hung around and did the Wicked Angel Blizzard thing combination, probably, you know, a good 5 years, I think we did that. And then it was just a choice on my part. I just wanted to get into more of, you know, writing my own stuff and kind of doing my own little thing. I don't know. I think we had a break in the band, you and I. Forget not, you know, not a breakup, but just a break in playing. I forget what happened, but
and Razorback thing. Were you playing bass still at the time?
Yeah, I was still playing bass, and I got brought to my attention. There was a couple of brothers on the west side of Windsor, Bob and Ron Sharon were their names, and they had a place, their own place with a basement, and they jammed out, and they were looking for somebody. And I was brought to my attention by a mutual friend. I said, you know, I'll go jam with them, you know, just for something to do, see what's up, and we kind of clicked. And I was still playing bass, but I was getting into more vocals and writing music then. So we, right away, we didn't play any covers. We just started writing. And then we came up with another 8-song demo cassette at the time.
And just the two guys, it was a 3-piece again.
So 3-piece again, yeah. Like, you know, you and I were, of course, we started as a 4-piece, I think, and then went to a 3 and stayed 3. And then Razorback as well was a 3. It was short-lived. It was a year, year and a half. We came up with some good tunes, and we ended up doing a show. The band's name was called Razorback, and we did a couple of hall shows and stuff like that. And actually, it went off really well. But that was short-lived. I think whatever happened, it just the band broke up for whatever reason. I really can't remember back then.
Who were your influences back then?
First Kiss album I got at 12 was Destroyer. I mean, I was like Gene Simmons. I was a bass player. You know, I was, you know, I idolized him, and then, you know, I got into bass, and we did some Kiss songs, of course, you and I. You know, just the whole show aspect, the flames, the bombs, the lights, the smoke. I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to go see him when I was 14, too young to go myself. My mom and dad, speaking of parents, brought me to the show Detroit at 14, bought tickets for us. And we went to had to take me to my brother at the time, Tim, was only 12.
Yeah, so he went too, though?
He went too. And we went to this Kiss show with our parents, and I was just, you know, if you've seen a Kiss show, even today, but let alone back in the day, you were awestruck. And from there, I said, yeah, I think that's
how you end up getting called freewheeling Mad Dog later after seeing Kiss when you're 12, 14 years old.
It's a pretty hard to remain under control after that.
And have your influences or music taste changed over the years, or
you know what? There's you know, you get into other stuff, and you know, the heavier stuff kicked in. You know, the Slayers and Megadeth and all that, and that's great. And we got into all that too. And you know what? I find I still go back to those old Kiss albums, first 3, 4, especially to this day. I just it's like they're endless, timeless when you play them. I would say I still grab onto that.
So let's talk about your band Psycho. That's you on guitar and vocals. And what prompted the transition, first of all, to this band? And this was in the 80s as well, like mid-80s, I guess.
We're around 1986 at this time. Razorback broke up. And I was, you know, I was hungry to keep playing. I ended up finding another couple guys that were friends out in the Belle River area, Dan the Riviere and Gerald Butler. Again, through a mutual friend, you know how that is. You know, yeah. Somebody always knows somebody that plays something, and when you're into that kind of stuff. So I went and checked them out. But at this time, there was a little gap. I grabbed a guitar, just basically out of necessity to write songs.
Uh-huh.
It's a little tougher to write music and melodies on a bass. You can to some degree, but a lot easier on guitar. So I just grabbed the guitar and started, you know, chording some riffs and doing, saying, just to make it a little easier to get stuff. And then, you know, I ended up liking it so much, I stuck with it. And I got Gerald Butler out of Belle River to play bass and Dan Riviere on drums. And at that time, I think I was about 23 at the time, they were only 16.
Wow.
So I groomed them into metalheads for sure.
Very cool.
We started it, and I came up with the name Psycho.
Since you played both instruments, guitar and bass, how did you find the response to, like, a crowd and that kind of thing? Was it any different between bass guitar? I mean, you were probably the same as a performer, I guess, but, I mean, do people, do you think, kind of relate differently to the guitar being, like, a melodic source of music as opposed to bass? Or
I guess being a guitar player-singer combo.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of attention is drawn to you over just being a guitar player. So
right, and I guess that works either way for you, because you play bass and sang.
Yeah, exactly. So the attention's drawn to vocals for sure.
Right.
More than, you know, first and foremost, because, mm-hmm. And then if you're combining an instrument with that, then you're gaining a lot of attention too. But to pick bass over guitar, they're both excellent. I would play in a band today. On bass, no question asked.
As you might be, doing it on. Yeah. As a matter of fact.
There just might be a Wicked Angel reunion. You never know, folks. Of course, with guitar, people take to the riffs of the song as well a little bit more than a bass. Bass allows you to, you know, jump around and go crazy for sure. I mean, it's, you know, gives you more room to move.
Maybe a little easier, maybe. Than-
exactly. You know, with, you know, there's a lot going on when you're playing guitar, let alone playing guitar and vocals. I mean, you're pretty limited to, you know, you're locked into what you're doing. So.
And then leads are, now, were your leads always worked out to be the same thing all the time? Or
yes, most of them were. You know, as you're playing live and you're, you know, when you're writing songs and you're first doing them, you know, maybe you're just whipping a bunch of stuff around a lot of times till you get something that fits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after a while, the more times you play it, you do find you get into a groove with you know, certain scales or whatever you're doing there, and you kind of get them nailed down. But you know what, there's always a song or two that you kind of leave wide open,
right,
just
yeah,
to
course.
Do it. And you know, who's the master beside me?
It's all of them. Everything's wide open, man.
Big JD was infamous for that one.
Tell us about the first Psycho album, and that was recorded here in Windsor at Polaris Studio. You actually did a record album, if anybody remembers what those are. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we marched along pretty quickly. You know, the band fell in place quick. I had a vision. I had the material already. You know, I had the experience of, you know, being, you know, in Wicked Angel with you all those years. And, you know, 7-8 years have gone by now. So, you know, I knew exactly what to do and what not to do to move this machine along quickly.
Right.
So as soon as we got about 10 songs or so, we picked 8 that we felt that we'd get on vinyl. Right. At those days, it was still vinyl. And we just, you know, raised our own money, went into a local studio called Polaris, still around today. George, hello. Great place if anybody's looking, you know, for a place to
is
go.
Is that his name, or were you saying hi to him?
No.
Okay.
I am George. Hello, how are you? But his name is
no, George
actual.
Is a great guy. Yeah. I interviewed him for the Four on the Floor film. So,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Very cool.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad you got to talk to him. Great, great guy. So he helped us out. We went and chatted with him, said, this is what we want to do. He says, yeah, we can do this for you. And actually went pretty smooth. I think it was only about a month. It took us about a month. We went in, you know, got it all recorded. He sent it off, got it all pressed. We got 1,000 limited albums called Psycho on the Loose. There's still a couple kicking around today, if you can believe it.
We just might have one kicking around here in the studio today. And you recorded some stuff after that at Polaris as well. That wasn't like officially released, or at least yet, right?
As you know, you're going in with the album and you're only going to pick a few songs, or the songs you had, you know, at that time was the songs we had down pretty, you know,
right, yeah.
pretty tight. So we figured, let's just do these. So I had some other material, and then I wrote some, you know, right after that, had a lot of ideas. So there was about another 7 or 8 songs that I wanted to get on some sort of recording. So we went back in and played live, set up in the studio, mic'd everything, and actually just played live. And George recorded, and it came out fantastic. And that little number called Out for Blood.
And where can listeners find Psycho online?
You can actually get us on YouTube. You can find Psycho on YouTube. We're on Facebook now as well, as just the internet takes off, makes things a lot easier for us. You can find Psycho there as well.
And on the Facebook, Psycho actually is very cool, because you got a lot of nostalgic stuff up there. Pictures and shirts, and the videos actually, I think, are linked up from your YouTube probably and stuff. And
yep, I got some stuff back in the day from you and I with Wicked Angels on there, right through my whole career, and stuff that we're doing now and recording recent stuff. There's a couple videos, a couple tracks I've done in the recent years.
Yeah, right on.
And I'm going to be posting more stuff as we go along.
And just in case anybody's interested, or until there's psycho.com or something like that, we'll have a link from the wickedangel.ca website to Psycho and to some other things you got happening, which we'll talk about. So we do have a copy of Psycho's On the Loose here in the studio, and we're going to hear a song from that. It's Psycho On the Loose, recorded at Polaris Studio. And what's the tune?
Crank 'em out some Motorized.
All right, we're back. Mike Freewheeling Mier here from the heavy metal band Psycho, live in the studio today, actually.
How's everybody doing out there?
So now tell us about the 25th anniversary Psycho CD that's in the works, and what's going to be on this, and where are you? I know you're doing a new song for that, so tell us about that whole thing.
As life rolled on, you know, you get married, you have kids, you got to work, you do all that fun stuff, and then, you know, I would say several years ago, I got back into the writing and recording again.
Right.
Maybe 2004, I probably started to get into it a lot more than just having a guitar sitting in the corner collecting dust. Mm-hmm. Started writing again, and then a local studio here in Windsor. Some friends of mine that started up called Rockery Records, guitar player.
Heard about him from a mutual friend.
A mutual friend again, here we go. A lot of mutual friends. At that time, it was Scott Warren and Andy Langmuir. Andy played guitar, and Scott played drums as well as had the studio. So I went in, talked to them guys, brought them some material, said, hey, you know, you guys help me out. We'll put it on some, we'll record it. And it kind of got started from there. I think I got about 6 or 7 songs now with them. So I'm going to accumulate that with the Out for Blood live studio.
Right, that was live off the floor. I don't know if we mentioned that. But yeah,
we kind of did a little bit. But there's another little era in there that was some hard thrashy tunes on there, too. So I'm going to take some of them with the album.
On the loose.
On the loose, and pick the best of, sort of, with the new stuff. And we recorded a brand new track we just finished up called My Intentions Were Good. That's going to be on it as well. So it goes from 1987 to 2012, 25 years. It will be called Fueled by Intoxication.
Very cool.
You will be able to get that from a link from Facebook as well. And we're working out some negotiations with CDN Records here in southwestern Ontario for a little bit of distribution, hopefully.
Sweet. That's really cool that you'll be signed, basically, 25th anniversary, putting out all the old Psycho stuff and something new. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to do a video through OMS Entertainment, and we're going to do a nice official video and along with that, too, so fans will be able to get their fingers on that and probably do some retro T-shirt style stuff with the new disc on it, and there's a lot of good fun stuff coming up.
Right on. Cool. Can't wait for that, and hopefully we'll be able to premiere that on CJAM when that comes out, and maybe have you back in, or
sure,
we'll do
love
something.
Yeah, this is great. I appreciate it.
And you were recently interviewed for the Four on the Floor film as well. You're on there talking about music history here in the city and about playing back in the day in the 80s and whatnot. You're not actually in town anymore. You're here just actually to do the song, which is really cool, and then coming back to do the video. So
yeah, I don't reside in the Windsor, Ontario area anymore. It's my hometown. I come, as often as I can. And I do try and get down a couple times a year, but I specifically have come to just record and then come to do the follow-up video for it.
Very cool.
As well as you interviewed me for the Four on the Floor documentary.
Yeah, so. The website for that actually is 4, onthefloor.ca. So, listeners can check that out and keep an eye out for it, which is still in production. So
definitely looking forward to that, and I'll hoping be down for the premiere, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully a 2013 thing, maybe a film festival, who knows.
We're right on.
Not exactly sure yet, and it's a big process because there's so many people to talk to.
Could you get yourself involved in anything?
No,
more?
I don't think so. I don't think it's possible.
Fans, I'm trying to get them to manage me.
And the music video coming out, I guess that'll be early 2013 or something. So
yeah, I think disc completion.
Coinciding everything.
Yeah, I'm going to try and get the video. We'll get that done middle of December, editing all that stuff. I'm thinking February.
Yep.
Hopefully.
Sounds good. Where, again, can listeners find Psycho on the web?
Definitely Facebook's the way to go right now. That would be facebook.com/Psycho25. TH anniversary, so Psycho 25th anniversary.
Oh, you actually get to choose the name and everything on the
page? Yeah, it was lucky enough. Right among 3 million of them that you get to, are already taken.
Psycho 1, Psycho 2, Psycho 3. I know
I
it's
managed
crazy,
to
man.
Get Psycho 25th anniversary. I can't believe it.
Yeah, well, best wishes to Psycho and the new CD and the video and everything that you got going on, and it'd be great to have you back on in the near future.
Thanks a lot, and definitely support your local rock band. See them live.
Well, look for the 25th anniversary Psycho release on CDN Records in early 2013, as well as the video for My Intentions Were Good, the new song Mike recorded at Scott Warren's local Rockery Records, and I'll see you next week.